Well, good evening, brothers and sisters. It's wonderful to see all of you who have been able to join us again for our Sunday evening Bible classes. So this evening, our brother Frank Abel is down to lead us in our consideration. His topic is Russia Triumphant, Europe Chained. So, of course, with all the news events that are currently going on, this is something that we're quite interested to consider. By way of introduction to tonight's consideration, our brother Frank has asked us to take an opening reading from Isaiah chapter 2.
All right, brothers and sisters, I want to first of all say that the reading that we had tonight in Isaiah chapter 2 is just a backdrop to our comments. It gives the flavor that we need whenever we're looking at events so serious and so traumatic as what we're looking at in the Ukraine and the destruction that's going on there at this particular time. We have no desire to follow the media on this in the sense of trying to give our interpretation of it or our feelings about it or, you know, interviewing people who are being upset or having to leave their homes. You can see how that's all the world has got to be able to deal with this. And really, that isn't dealing with it. It's just trying to illustrate what's going on. I just wish so many more people would open their Bibles to read, because God is the one that can tell us the future, as we all know. And we have based our faith, our personal faith, on God's ability to do that. So, we're looking at this place down here in the bottom of your screen. I can just get the circle to go on. There we are. And you can see Ukraine there. You can see Moldova. You can see Belarus. And they've been in the news. They are the nations which it seems that President Putin wants to take over. Whether that is only the beginning is up to, you know, what you believe, where you read it, and what you might think. We'll go over in a minute what we believe the Bible requires, but that's a very, very interesting development for us as Christadelphians, waiting for the King of the North to move. There's a lot of verses. You can see them. Psalms, Isaiah, Daniel, Joel, Micah, Zechariah, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Revelation, and probably a number of more that they could be used in some capacity to tell us more about what's happening in the world today. But also, just before we get into that, I'd like to just concentrate on this. A number of you would have seen this map. It was just recently given to us by the CBM, telling us about the Christadelphians that are living in Ukraine. And as far as I can take from that, there must be about 80 brothers and sisters in those circle areas there where they're living. And a lot of those are being severely shelled and destroyed by the Russian onslaught. So they need to be in our prayers. And we need to, you know, seek God's help for them to get out of the country. That seems to be the only possible way to avoid being just taken over by Russia in every sense. So we will say that and just get on to now what our lecture is about. The title is Russia Triumphant, Europe Chained. But I wanted you to see this comparison first to give you an idea of what we might look at and what you might think about as we're going through this discussion and this presentation tonight. You see, it could be that you would think, well, Russia's triumphant because look at the weapons they're used. Look at what they can do. Look what they are doing. That's the way that Europe is chained. Well, you might say that a lot of us have looked more to that since the development of this war. But it still may be that there is an element of this involved, where you could say Europe chained, Russia triumphant. In other words, Europe had been changed before we realized that Russia was triumphant because look at the chains. Now, the chains are not literal chains, but they are made out of metal, and some of them probably would be of plastic because of the gas pipelines. But that is the links that Russia has going to Europe. And many, many people have been able to foresee and have been able to see for years that Europe was becoming more and more dependent on Russian energy. And most of us would be well aware of this Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which is now delayed indefinitely, even though it's connected up. There are some very, very interesting things developing in the world that we are presently living in and looking at and watching so intently. But this title, Europe or Russia Triumphant, Europe Chained, is a book that was written called Anatolia, which was written by John Thomas back in 1854. And I just wanted you to see the introductory remarks that that John Thomas put on this. He said, "All the author bespeaks for the following pages is a patient, sober-minded, and candid perusal. He is aware that the title page is an exhibition of startling proportions, very much at variance indeed with the suppositions of those who are considered the most enlightened statesmen and politicians of the day. That Russia should be triumphant with such powers against her as France and England is amongst the impossibilities of those who put confidence in princes and make flesh their arm. But their thoughts are not of the purposes of the Most High, who ruleth over the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. He has decreed the triumph of Russia over East and West, previous to the final overthrow of its own dominion, after the manner of Sennacherib. And he has registered that decree in the sacred archives of the Jewish nation some 2,440 years ago, as will be amply explained in this work." Now, I want you to think about that a little bit. This is a little easier for us to do than it would be for, you know, people who have never heard of Christadelphians, never mind the book Anatolia. See, John Thomas was seeing a world that was so different than ours in 1854. And I want to just try to show you the ways in which it was different, so as to illustrate the remarkable truth of what John Thomas is saying here. He wasn't putting his emphasis on the opinions of people, the confidence of armies and nations which were proud and powerful to say, well, we will do this and we will do that. No, he was just saying, this is what God says is going to happen. That's our strength, brothers and sisters. That's where we rely. So if we go into the Bible and we open the pages of this book of Joel, where it says, prepare for war. Now, nations have been preparing for war ever since, prior to World War II. Because even though they thought that war might end all wars, they didn't stop preparing for war. But Joel's passage in the chapter 3, verses 9 to 11, and all my quotations tonight are from the New King James Version, just because I wanted to make it all from one version, and the New King James makes it a little clearer by just updating some of the words that we are so familiar with. So he says, "Proclaim you this among the nations, prepare for war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords, your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble and come, all you nations, and gather together all around. Cause your mighty ones to go down there, O Yahweh." So there has been a preparation for war in a unique sense. We may not have ever seen the actual preparation for war that will now take place with this invasion of of Armageddon, because a lot of the European nations are waking up to the fact they're not very well prepared, not very well trained when we might have thought they were. And this idea of beating your plowshares into swords, yes, many of the European nations haven't been really, as the Americans would say, spending your fair share. But it may change, and it may get worse than we have seen it in the past. You see, look at these things. Did John Thomas ever see an atomic bomb go off? Like, we only see it by films of it, but no, it wasn't even thought of during his day. Did he see submarines, atomic submarines that have missiles in them that could essentially go and bomb any city in the world with bombs that are so much more destructive than the ones at Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Did he ever see the missiles and anti-missiles that we now know of and hear of so often in today's world? Did he ever see these things that look like horses, but they're actually robots, where people now are thinking that maybe the people should stay home and run a computer and let the robot take care of the fighting? Did he ever see aircraft carriers? Did he ever see airplanes? Did he ever see the electronic means of linking people all around the earth as they are today with this, and especially with social media? So in a sense, you see, the world has been preparing for war with all these new weapons. And the nations of the war that are nations of the world that make them have been profiting by them. So yes, they have been doing it, and they have been doing it in a tremendous way since the time John Thomas wrote that book, Anatolia. So you could just imagine that if he had ever seen this, what he might have thought and what he might have also written. Look at this. You see, this is the way the world is conflicted. If it was truly just a matter of getting your weapons of war and being a soldier and going to war, that would be one thing. But when you read this, that top weapons companies boast Ukraine-Russia tensions are a boon for business. Well, I don't think you'd hear too much about that right now, but before the war broke out, yeah, that was a boast, because here it is. As the United States weighs more involvement in the growing conflict between Ukraine and Russia, some of the largest weapons companies in the world, Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, are openly telling their investors that tensions between the countries are good for business. And the second statement there. Statements come as the U.S. government escalates arms shipments to Ukraine, among them the Javelin missiles that are a joint venture between Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. House Democrats, meanwhile, are trying to quickly push through a bill that would significantly increase U.S. military assistance to Ukraine and impose new sanctions on Russia. Well, that was back in January when that was reported. So you can see how the world has just changed within a month. And again, what was Russia doing? Well, these are interesting things related in the Daily Telegraph in England. Again, it's back in January. And it talks about the Russian entanglement of Europe. And that was one of the reasons why it was worth thinking about whether or not, you know, Putin would do this by just getting Europe so entangled, there wouldn't be any fight needed. But have a look. So it says, charm offensive in Germany and Italy has helped Russian president divide Europe's or EU's Ukraine response. And then the other bolded part there, and the bolding is always mine in these quotes. But experts say it highlights Putin's brazen effort to undermine Western unity by entangling European firms and therefore their governments with Russian business interests that they are desperate not to lose. So this complicity is really interesting. How it will turn out now with these economic sanctions on Russia, I don't know. And it could turn corners that we don't expect and have never thought of. But it's interesting how Russia has tried to do that. And yet, when it came down to it, they went to war. So we take this idea of Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. And some of you are old enough to know how in the time of the turnover of the Soviet Union to the Russian Federation that some people gave up on this interpretation. They thought, oh, well, we thought Russia was going to be the nation that would bring, you know, the rest of the world to their knees. But now the Soviet Union's broken up. The Warsaw Pact is dissolved. These nations are now looking westward. They wanted their freedom. Maybe we have to look somewhere else for who this interpretation belongs to. Well, let's just have a little look. In the New King James Version, it uses the word Rosh. So in verse 2, Son of man, set your face against Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, and prophesy against him. So that's there, and brethren have been making something of this as long as I can remember. I've heard many people, even when I was a child, and could listen to them and thought, well, they're making quite a point of this, but it was about Russia. And they were using that verse too to start their presentations. Well, no wonder, brothers and sisters. When you see a map like this, the ancient world and the descendants of Noah, this is presented by Rand McNally. So nothing to do with Christadelphians, but where does he put Magog? Well, you don't see Rosh on there. You see Togarma, you see Gomer, you see Tubal, you see Tarshish in various places. You certainly see enough to think about this. That's not the only place where we find them in Ezekiel chapter 38. We find them in Genesis chapter 10. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, Magog, Tubal, Meshech, Togarma, Tarshish. Those number of names that are again brought to light in the chapter 38 of Ezekiel. I think it's amazing that we see these things, and God gives us, you know, in his whole word. He didn't just start off the prophets. He gave us the five books of Moses so that we could look at where these people came from. And that's the mercy to God. That's the blessing that he has for us, that we would just open our minds to read more of his word and look at what he's saying and where else is it being said, comparing spiritual with spiritual. So what did John Thomas have to say about this? Well, again, going back to that book, Anatolia, he wasn't able to see what we see, but what did he see in the word? Well, we need to read this. The question as to what nations are signified by Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal has long been since determined by the learned. The celebrated Bochart, about the year 1640, observed in his elaborate researches into sacred geography that Ros, or Rosh, is the most ancient form under which history makes mention of the name of Russia. He even contended that Rosh and Meshach properly denote the nations of Muscovy and Russia. It is credible, says he, that from Rosh and Meshach, that is the Rossi and Moshke of whom Ezekiel speaks, descended the Russians and the Muscovites, nations of the greatest celebrity in European Scythia. We have indeed ample and positive testimony that the Russian nation was called Rus by the Greeks in the earliest period in which we find it mentioned. That is, the Rosh are a Scythian nation bordering on the northern Taurus. So we see that he was using his study of sacred geography, and we know that there's many other books now that we can access that were written well before the Christadelphian name was coined, to illustrate to us that this is a belief that people have held for a long time. So he says, I will bring thee forth and all thine army. In Ezekiel 38, verses 3 and 4, the Lord Yahweh says, behold, I am against you, O Gog, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. I will turn you around, put hooks into your jaws, and lead you out with all your army, horses and horsemen, all splendidly clothed, a great army with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords. Now, the interesting thing is, if you've got to look at these passages and make the most out of everything, like don't leave anything out. So that was one of the wonderful things about the brother who tutored me in Bible study is look at every word. Don't leave any words out. Check how they're used in other parts of the Bible. Well, this expression, "I will turn you around, put hooks in your jaws," is of my interest at this point in our presentation, because it looks like this power of Russia was going a different direction than what God really wanted. So God says, "I will turn you around." But then he says, "And I'll put hooks into your jaws." Now, the idea of putting hooks into your jaws sounds pretty crude, but it comes from the ideas of the ancient Assyrians, who, when they took people captive, they either put a ring in their nose or they had some method of putting it in their jaws or in their cheeks. You would not want to try to run away with something attached to such a sensitive organ or a part of your body as a hook into your nose or into your jaws. So God is going to deal with Russia like this. "I will turn you around." Well, that's what we do with horses. We put a bit in their mouth. And by that bit, and with a harness attached to it, we're able to turn the much more powerful horse around. So God's telling us he's more powerful than this Gog, and he's going to turn him around and put hooks into his jaws like a captive, and he's going to lead him forth. So in Isaiah chapter 37, verses 28 to 29, you read about this other case where it's talking about Sennacherib. That's Isaiah 37. That's where Hezekiah is dealing with these 185,000. I thought that was really interesting because we saw the numbers of Russians around Ukraine. It was growing. You know, there was 100,000, 120, 150, and then I heard 190, and then 200,000. Well, there was 185,000 men around Jerusalem. And God is now telling what he's going to do with it. He says in verse 29, "Because your rage against me and your tumult have come up into my ears, therefore I will put my hook in your nose and my bridle in your lips, and I'll turn you back by the way which you came." So the idea of turning back or turning around is God is taking them from one way, forcing them into another way. And I think it's so significant, brothers and sisters, to see how the Soviet Union fell apart. And then they were turned around because the Warsaw Pact fell apart and they didn't have all those Eastern European nations. And now God's leading them on. And it's interesting that this man Putin is growing up to be someone who may go all the way, because it may be that this man who's got his office there and, you know, is talking like anybody today would with all the methods of talking to people around the world and seeing them from your own office. But does this man have hooks in his jaws? Now, I leave it as a question because many people have been, they've misunderstood it or they have judged it incorrectly by saying that this man or that man was the one that God would lead right through this prophecy to its conclusion. So we won't go so far as to say this man does have hooks in his jaws and God put them there, but he is the most likely candidate of anyone we've seen so far. And it will be very interesting just to see what he's going to do next, because many people have thought, how does this man ever get out of what he's doing? Well, if God's got hooks in his jaws, they're in Putin's jaws, he's leading them on, then just look out. Look at what he did to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh got to the point where he was upsetting his own people. "Don't you know that Egypt is destroyed? What are you doing?" But his heart was hardened. He was going to do what he wanted to do, and he was powerful enough to do it. Now, here's an article that was written by Vladimir Putin himself. Look at the date on it, July 12th, 2021. So this is long before this current crisis broke out, but it was probably in his planning that far back. And it's kind of an interesting article. It's 18 pages long, but it's worth reading. This is just a little of what he said. During the recent direct line, when I was asked about Russia-Ukrainian relations, I said that Russians and Ukrainians were one people, a single whole. These words were not driven by some short-term considerations or prompted by the current political context. It is what I have said on numerous occasions, and what I firmly believe. I therefore feel it necessary to explain my position in detail and share my assessments of today's situation. Now, it's interesting that he believed the Russians and the Ukrainians were one people. Maybe he really meant more than that, but that's all he said at the time. Then he goes on to say a little later on, you see, in his article, Russians, Ukrainian, and Belarusians are all descendants of ancient Rus, which was the largest state in Europe. Slavic and other tribes across the vast territory from Ladoga to Novgorod to Skot to Kiev to Chernigov were bound together by one language, which we now refer to as Old Russian. Economic ties, the rule of the princes of the Rurik dynasty, and after the baptism of Rus, the Orthodox faith. The spiritual choice made by Saint Vladimir, who was both Prince of Novgorod and Grand Prince of Kiev, still largely determines our affinity today. Now, there may be some connection between his going into the Ukraine and where he sees this ancient Russian center being, because it doesn't seem to have been in Moscow. It seems to have been in the Ukraine. Well, Ukraine wasn't called Ukraine then. So he's looking at it through the eyes of history. But one thing I don't want you to miss is that when Christadelphians have said that Russia is mentioned in the Bible by the fact that this word Rus is referring to an ancient name of Russia, Putin agrees. And so do historians and people today who are looking at it through maybe more critical eyes than ever before. We hold on to our belief on this, brothers and sisters. It's well grounded through the study and the work of our brother Thomas. Now, Russia is to be a guard to the others. When he goes through and talks about Persia, Ethiopia, Libya, that way you don't have time to go through who they are. You know who they are. They're given names that we have around today. But Gomer and all his troops and the house of Togarmer from the far north and all its troops and many people with you, prepare yourself and be ready, you and all your companies that are gathered about you, and be a guard for them. So this word guard becomes pretty important. Like, what does that word mean? Can it mean that Russia is sort of, the overseer? He is the one, or Gog, rather, of Russia. He's the one that's directing everything. He's the general in charge of everything. Or is it the fact that he's got them all in prison and they can't do anything about it? So it's not easy to determine that by looking at the word, because the word in the Hebrew, it could mean the man who is the guard. It could mean the post of a guard post, or it could mean the prison where the people are imprisoned. Figuratively, it's a deposit, also as observed a usage, or abstractly, or an example concretely, being diligence, guard, office, prison, ward, watch. That may be something we will just have to continue to look at, is to see how this works out, to see in what way he can do what he's doing in Ukraine, and then it can later be said that they're with you, and you are guard to them. If he goes on with what appears to be this genocide, this ethnic cleansing of getting rid of the Ukrainians, especially the Ukrainian Orthodox people, get them out of Ukraine, and then reestablishes the authority of the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine, he might just be able to do that, to have Ukraine fully with him, not just people that are in prison, so to speak, that have no choice, but people that are actually out there because they've joined him. Now, you see, there's something that was missing in John Thomas's day. And it was another prophecy. It's not that he didn't see it. He just didn't see the degree to which it would happen. And we have seen it probably well beyond even our greatest hopes. I can't remember myself. I was too young at the time when they announced the state of Israel. But I can remember my grandparents really being very happy about it and talking about it, because I lived with them for a while I was in a work term. And so this idea of bringing back the captives of Judah and Jerusalem, well, you can bring back the captives of Judah and Jerusalem in a man-to-man, a man-to-woman, a family sense, but you can also bring it back in the sense of the area that was once Judah and the area that was Jerusalem is now back in the control of the nation. So he says, I will also gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. I will enter into judgment with them there on account of my people, my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations. They have also divided up my land. So it's obviously people of God's heritage, and they are the ones that now are in the land of Israel. So it was right when you see how it turned out according to God's prophecy that this hooks in his jaws didn't happen too soon. Well, 1948 was just after the Second World War. Russia didn't turn around till 1990. So that was, good 40 years before they turned around into, the idea of what Russia is today and who they are. Starting out again on this route. Even Tel Aviv wasn't there in John Thomas Day. There was no city at all. It was just sand dunes. Look at what's happened in 100 years. Surely, brothers and sisters, we are in a prime time to live, to behold the number of things that God is doing to fulfill the prophecies that the major prophets and the minor prophets have said would happen. So it says about this Gog, Magog, and Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. After many years, you will come on the mountains of Israel. So it's not being something that he he sends missiles to and conquers it like that. Those kind of be people. And as this prophecy develops into Ezekiel 39, there's going to be a lot of people that will come into the land of Israel under the guidance of Gog. After many days, you will be visited. In the latter years, you will come into the land of those brought back from the sword, gathered from many people on the mountains of Israel. See, there can't be any doubt about it. The people have got to be back there. They've got to be on the mountains of Israel. And they were brought out of the nations. And now they're dwelling confidently, safely, or confidently. You will ascend, coming like a storm, covering the land like a cloud, you and all your troops and many people with you. It's interesting just to take a little out of what people are saying about this war in Ukraine. People have said that they did not come quick enough. They didn't come with enough people. Well, this prophecy in Ezekiel 38, and linked as it is with Daniel chapter 11, the last five verses, speaks about a very quick, a huge number of people coming like, as he says, a storm, covering the land like a cloud. Maybe Russia will have learned something. Maybe it was necessary for them to have learned something before they come to Jerusalem. But they come with an evil plan. Thus says the Lord Yahweh, on that day it shall come to pass that thoughts will arise in your mind. You will make an evil plan. You will say, I will go up against the land of unwalled villages. I will go to a peaceful people who dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates, to take plunder, to take booty, to stretch out your hand against the waste places that are again inhabited, against a people gathered from the nations who have acquired livestock and goods and who dwell in the midst of the land. Now, the interesting thing about this dwelling safely that I don't think we ever saw until just in the last couple of years, this idea of dwelling safely was a bit contradicted by all the walls that were built around the city of Jerusalem and around various parts of Israel. But since the Abraham Accords, we see that the traditional enemy of Israel is starting to make peace with Israel. even making defense agreements with Israel. And it may be that there's going to be a time when those walls, which really are only made to keep people out, they won't keep tanks out, they can't stop helicopters coming over and dropping troops down or paratrooping into the area. So they're made for one thing, to keep people out. So this dwelling safely, if people think that, you know, I can't really see that, I don't really know that this is, you got the idea interpreted properly, well, just keep looking, because as we've seen in so many cases, as we look with eyes that can see what's happening presently, we start to see something that more and more looks like Ezekiel 38 before our eyes. So where is the opposition? Why did they allow it? Why did they allow Gog to come up like that? Well, again, brothers and sisters, it mentions Sheba, Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish, and we know about Tarshish. We know how much research that former brothers and sisters have done to give us the evidence that Tarshish is Britain, and with the young lions thereof. And where are they? What are they able to do to stop Putin? Isn't it interesting that it had to be an age where there were weapons of mass destruction, like atomic weapons and maybe biological weapons, and the various diseases that people can now transmit by just sowing them in the world, and they just go through a nation and shut it down. So yes, these nations could be held at bay while Russia does this. That would seem to be true. If you heard Biden's speech, he might have made some of the Americans happy, but in terms of what is going on in Ukraine, his help that he's sending them is being quite restrained in a red line. They refuse to cross over. We do not want American soldiers on a Ukrainian soil. And so if that is the case, then it may be that only NATO nations would ever have the defense of United States coming up to their defense. And where would Israel at least stand? Well, Israel is feeling more and more isolated. And I just think it's incredible what's really going on in the land, even apart from all this, because look at the Russian military bases that are presently in the land of promise. Like that idea of Hamath there, that blue circle, comes from Numbers 34, verse 7 and 8, where it defines the northern border of Israel. From the Great Sea, you shall mark out your borderline to Mount Hor. From Mount Hor, you shall mark out your border to the entrance of Hamath. There it is, the ancient city. And where do we find the Russians? They have a naval base in Tartus. They have an air base in Latakia. And there's war going on there between Israel and the people of Lebanon and the people of Syria at this particular time, not so much with the people of Lebanon, but with the people, they are fighting for Iran in Lebanon. Now, let's just look for a little bit at this president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. I think it's quite important to notice one particular thing. And this was reported in the Times of Israel. And it says, amid renewed tensions between Russia and Ukraine, the leader of Ukraine drew parallels between his nation and the Jewish people at the event organized by Jews in Kiev. We know what it's like not to have an own state. We know what it means to defend one's own state and land with weapons in hand at the cost of our own lives. President Volodymyr Zelensky, who is Jewish, said during a speech on Wednesday. Now, he's a most unlikely person to be a president when you look at his qualifications. Zelensky, an actor and a comedian who was elected president in 2019. But I would think that most of the people who have listened to his speeches recently have greatly admired him for the way he's stayed right there. He wouldn't leave the country, even at all the threats of Russia. And he wouldn't leave the country with the invitation of United States for him to get out while he can. He stayed right with his people. So he's turned out to be a person which is really quite interesting. But did you know that it says, in addition, This is the same article. Ukraine's ambassador to Israel, Kornichuk, told the Times of Israel that Ukraine may recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Wow. Like, that's not just support of Israel. That's support of Israel like the United States has when Trump was there and made it the capital city, or that's where he put his embassy in the capital that Jerusalem recognized. That is Jerusalem. So it's a goal Israel has been promoting intensively in recent years, pending some security-related conditions. Kornichuk did not specify those conditions and has not replied to questions on the matter from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. I suppose he's got enough on his plate. So it's interesting how Israel is involved in this. So as Russia prepares to invade, now I got this out of the news, and it was January 25. So this is actually, you know, a good month old, but it was recognized the danger to the Jews in Ukraine. So as an estimated 100,000 Russian troops massed on the border of Ukraine, Israel is preparing to evacuate some 75,000 people living in eastern Ukraine who are believed to be eligible for Israeli citizenship. In addition, an estimated 10,000 Israeli nationals are currently in Ukraine. That's a lot of people. And Israel has been busy getting them out. That was shown on TV of the airplanes landing one after another, loaded with Ukrainians who wanted to get out of Ukraine. So I just think it's so fascinating to see how when Russia is dealing with Ukraine, that Israel is involved. And then I haven't really been able to follow this up yet, but with the present leader of Israel, Bennett, going off to talk to Putin just yesterday, I believe, and then going off to talk to Germany and sort of playing a mediator between these countries is a very interesting thing to do for little Israel. At the same time, also, you know, continuing to take out the Iranians, or at least the missiles that are being stored in Syria. This world is really on the edge. And we need to be really excited about this and holding on to our faith at a time like this. But here's another thing to watch. Now, this is a very unusual picture. In fact, when I first saw this, I didn't believe it until I read a bit more and then kept reading to believe, yeah, this is what really is happening. That this Putin man is quite religious. Now, he may not be religious like a Christian elephant. In fact, he isn't. He has to live his religion, but he claims to be religious, and he's done a lot of things in the name of religion. And that's Kirill, the Archbishop of the Russian Orthodox Church, sitting beside him or standing beside him. This little note is also something that we found about Putin. It says he was born in 1952. He grew up as a working class neighborhood in a working class neighborhood in St. Petersburg. His path to power began as a KGB agent. He was in East Germany at the time of the 1991 collapse of the Soviet Union. He was forced to drive a cab to survive, but forged his future with a corrupt autocracy replaced communist control. Obsessed with restoring Russian honor, he emerged as an uncontested strongman determined to avenge the West expansion into Russia's historical sphere of influence. Putin is also a baptized and practicing member of the Russian Orthodox Church and supports Patriarch Kirill's view that a strong national church is part of the cultural and spiritual unity of Russia. I really think that that is an important point. So Russia has applied this to his belief that Ukraine is inseparable from Russia. So look at what he's done. Like, these churches used to be either museums or were just in a very terrible state of repair. But they've all been repaired and made beautiful and made presentable for a man who, from almost the first time he became leader, wanted to make sure that the Russian Orthodox Church was recognized in Russia. So it's an interesting aspect. I think we might see more of that as we go along. Now, I can't spend much time in this because we just don't have much time left, but I wanted to just illustrate You know, a map like this sometimes says a lot more than words. You can see Belarus north of Ukraine there on that map. And you can see Ukraine. You can see this little bit of Moldova there, which is not really Russian. It's, most of it is NATO country, but there is a sliver of it, which is Russian. And you can see why if he gets all those pieces of Ukraine at the south, he will close the ports of Ukraine. Ukraine would be a landlocked sea again, because they couldn't get in the Sea of Azov. They couldn't get into the ports in the Black Sea. But Russia's got its problems too, because where your yellow circle is there, he's got to get out of the Dardanelles. And Turkey, which is a NATO country, has closed that passage to ships that are in the Black Sea because of the war that's going on. And that was a right that was given to him when they made up, I guess, I'm not sure whether it was NATO or whether it was Turkey got that when they were looking at the peril that presented having access to the Black Sea, but just by that narrow passageway. So you might guess that where the next place he would be very interested in, if he did manage to continue to go, would be Turkey, especially that passageway. So we just watch. Now, it's interesting, and I'll just make a brief reference to this. You see, when John Thomas was writing Anatolia, there was a war going on. What war? The Crimea War. Where was it being fought? In Crimea. Who were the nations fighting? Well, it was dealing with the Ottoman Empire. It was dealing with the holy sites in and around Jerusalem. It was dealing with the French. It was dealing with the Catholics. It was dealing with Russia. Doesn't that sound like what's going on today? It's really interesting to see how excited John Thomas was about what was happening. But it's hard to imagine how he didn't think that this could go on to actually involve Israel and the movement of the Russian hosts down into Israel. But we've seen significant things happen since, but what happened there seems to be replaying out in history. And so we see Armageddon looming. I just think that one of the things that we must not forget about this sixth vial, and it's not our topic tonight, but it was the great river Euphrates, speaking of the Ottoman Empire. Where is the Ottoman Empire today? It was Turkey. It's almost collapsed down to it being just Turkey. If that has got to dry up further, then it could very well be they will lose the Dardanelles and the Bosphorus. That's just one of the things that would seem to be related to Bible prophecy. But the unclean spirits, like we've always said, the dragon is Russia. The beast is Germany, and the false prophet is Rome. Well, what are the main powers in Europe today that are speaking out? You've got Moscow, the dragon power. You've got the waking up, as it seems now that Germany has finally awakened, starting off this war in Ukraine by sending them helmets and now sending them deadly missiles to take out the Russian tanks and the Russian aircraft. So there's an awakening, brothers and sisters. The sixth vial is coming alive again. And the mouth of the false prophet, well, just listen to what the Pope has to say, because he's already said quite a bit, but he is building up what it would seem to me, the feet, the toes and the feet of the image, by trying to bring into the development of man all of the parts of the world by speaking kindly to world religions that they can all be one, they all worship one God, and just failing miserably to uphold what Christianity is all about. And then, of course, brothers and sisters, for us in particular, behold, I'm coming as a thief. Why would he link that at this time in history? Well, because that's when he comes. And so we hold on to our seats and must prepare for this. Jerusalem is the real prize. That's where Russia is headed. And as we just don't have time to talk about this much, but that city has got all the explosive elements. Where's Russia? Well, look at the real estate they have in Jerusalem. They claim to be the defenders of the Orthodox Church. Well, it's either the Ukrainians do or it's the Russians do. Well, maybe if the Ukrainians were eliminated, it wouldn't just be the Russians. Well, that's a quarter of Jerusalem that's being represented there. And here's this Church of Mary Magdalene that's being made to look so beautiful, but that's Russian. Well, Russia's there in mind. And you might guess that they'll be there in action soon. Well, why is the Bible saying these things? Why is the God of the Bible doing these things? He says, for my holy name's sake. That's clearly made out in Ezekiel 36. So if we want to see why, you can see it laid out very carefully for us in verses 22 to 24. I will take you from the nations, gather you out of the countries, and bring you into your own land, and you will be rid of your idols, and you will be cleansed, because God will make that happen. That's what he's doing with all the things behind the scenes. The king of the north, yes, he will come, and he will come into this glorious land, but he will stretch out his hands, not only in all the countries that have been mentioned, but he will also go down into Egypt. But he will come to his end in Jerusalem. As it says in verse 45, he will plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end and no one will help him. And if Putin is the man with the jaws, with the hooks in it, then brothers and sisters, we are not far away from this happening. We want to just make sure that you see this map. Brothers and sisters, some of you may have seen this before, but when we were putting this map together, we were really impressed by the number of nations and their flags, which we represented here as being represented in the nations which will come up against Jerusalem. And we don't want you to miss the bottom line of that. If you can see that on your screen, it says, if you do not believe the gospel or believe the scriptures and are not baptized, you are not ready. That would seem to me one of the things that we see right through the scriptures, especially the New Testament, of being ready, of the people ourselves being ready for what's going to happen. In the time of the day of trouble, is going to be terrible, but it will also bring forth the resurrection from the dead. See, there's so many passages in the Bible that speak about this. We want to be really gripped by it. I don't want to take any time in this because we're out of time. But it's interesting, the trouble ahead. If Russia takes Ukraine being one of the food baskets for the world, Russia will not only have control of the energy or a lot of the energy of the world they want, but they will also have the control over the grain and the various food commodities that are being used, especially in the Middle East and in Africa. That is something that many people are watching and many people are worried about. Well, the nations together is a drop in a bucket. It doesn't matter who he is. It doesn't matter what weapons he has. It doesn't matter how many troops he has. It doesn't matter where he is. He's nothing against God. God says the nations are as a drop of a bucket, counted as the small dust of the balance. The Russian-led troops that come into Israel will be disarmed. He says, I'll lead you against the mountains of Israel, verse 2 in Ezekiel 39. I'll knock the bow out of your left hand. I'll cause the arrows to fall out of your right hand. And you will fall upon the mountains of Israel, you and all your troops, your peoples that are with you. That's what God has said to this Gog who comes against his people in Jerusalem. And then the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. The kingdom will not be left to other people. It will not go through a similar process. It will break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms. It shall stand forever. So we rest our case on this, brothers and sisters, and we just say that in Psalm 27, verse 14, where we're in one of many places called upon to wait on Yahweh. Wait. Wait for him. Don't be anxious. Be of good courage. He will strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on Yahweh. That's what we want to do while we watch this all being fulfilled before our eyes.